Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Play a very, very simple game. The game is going to be called Take It or Leave It. So Mike Clay, he is a fantasy projection guy for ESPN. So what he does is he runs the numbers, he runs the data, and he gives you what his computer tells you are accurate fantasy projections for every player in the league. So today he did the Kansas City Chiefs. After the draft, we got everybody situated. These are what my numbers are telling me they project for your favorite player, and we'll play a very simple game called Take It or Leave It. Rob, let's start with Isaiah Pacheco because we talked a lot about running backs this year. They have Isaiah Pacheco with 183 carries for 776 yards and 6 touchdowns. He also would have 275 yards through the air and 2 touchdowns. Are you taking it or leaving it for Isaiah Pacheco?
I would leave it because I think he can do better. I don't have the stats in front of me, but I don't know the exact number. Kareem Hunt had 200 rushes last year, 200 plus, if I recall. Now, he did that in, 13, 14 games? That's outlandish by any metric. That's Marty Schottenheimer level of running a running back. But if we think Isaiah Pacheco is going to be a 15, 16, maybe 17-game player in 2025, I think he is going to be in that 200-carry range. I think he's going to be similar to a James Cook level of carry. And if you'll remember, James Cook was part of 3 running backs they used in Buffalo. They had the pass-catching one. They had James Cook. They had a grouping. That's kind of how I view Kansas City similarly. So I think Pacheco is going to get more than 183 carries. So because I think he's going to get more than 183, I think he has a chance to do more than 700 some odd on the ground. So I'm leaving it, but that's under the impression I think Isaiah Pacheco has a higher ceiling. And I think one thing that is going to transpire between now and the football season, in a weird twist of fate, I'm going to come off like the Isaiah Pacheco homer, because I feel like people have used last year as he wasn't the best running back on the team. It was handoff, 2 yards tackled. I don't know. It seems like Chiefs fans have kind of put Isaiah Pacheco down. I think Isaiah Pacheco, when healthy, is a 900-yard level of back, and I think there is no evidence based on his offseason that he won't be healthy in 2025 other than his football happening. I think he gets back to his roots for that point, so I will leave it because I think he can be a 900-yard guy.
Yeah, I agree with you for the most part. I do think they're pretty close on the carries. I mean, Isaiah Pacheco's first year, he got 170. 2 seasons ago, he got 205. If you're giving him 183, you're essentially splitting the difference between those two. Where I do agree with you is, I think if you give Isaiah Pacheco 183 carries, I think he just gets far more than 767 yards. I think we are basing this a little bit off last year when, obviously, a clear injury happened. I mean, if you look at the 2 years from Isaiah Pacheco, I think he's shown you what he is. He's a 4.5 to 4.7 yard per carry back. He averaged 3.7 yards per carry last year. So I'm with you. I think that we see Pacheco get back closer to what he was. So I'm guessing that their leading rusher is just going to be a more effective and efficient runner than what their projections have. Now, this is where I think it's very interesting because these numbers have Kareem Hunt as a pretty valuable part of their run game. They have Kareem Hunt on 115 carries for 451 yards and 5 rushing touchdowns. So they have Kareem Hunt as a pretty big piece of the Chiefs' run game. I think that is a mistake. Now, I don't have any problems with Kareem Hunt coming back. If you were using Kareem Hunt as your third down change of pace back at this stage in his career or your short yardage back, sure, that's perfectly fine. This has Kareem Hunt as a firm running back number two that gets thrown the ball a decent amount of times. He gets 29, 30 targets in this projection. He also gets 500 yards this year. I don't want Kareem Hunt to be that involved in the Chiefs offense. I would say if we are talking about Kareem Hunt getting 115 carries, that means Elijah Mitchell got hurt at some point this year. This means that Breshard Smith didn't really move up the depth chart and didn't really take anybody's job if you're telling me that Kareem gets that level of usage. So it's interesting. I would obviously take it for Kareem. Like, if you're telling me that's the best version of Kareem, obviously that's a pretty good year, I think, for where he is as a player. But I think you and I are on the same page when it comes to Pacheco. I think Pacheco is a lot better than their fantasy projections have him being this year.
I also think, and I just don't see that level of rushing from those two guys. I think you are going to see a little more committee from backs 2, 3, 4 from the Chiefs. I think it's going to look like how it looked in Buffalo last year. You have a lead back, that's Isaiah Pacheco, and Buffalo's James Cook. And then you kind of have a situational guy. It's third and short. Oh, that's Kareem Hunt. Hey, we need a guy to catch a pass here. Hey, that's more Breshard Smith. Hey, it's a second and 11. We think we can bust one here and make it a big run. We need some speed on the field. That's more Elijah Mitchell. I don't think running back two, whether it be Kareem Hunt or whoever, is going to be at 150 carries. Like, I'm looking at last year's numbers, Kareem Hunt had exactly 200 carries, and the next highest was Pacheco at 80, and then there are 50-some-odd from Steele. That's more like what I think the Chiefs offense could be this year. One lead back, and then kind of get in where you fit in. So I agree with you. I don't think the Hunt numbers make sense to me.
Yeah, looking at Buffalo, if you're using them as a comparison, so it's obviously different because Josh Allen gets so many carries.
Changes the calculus.
Yeah, that's not really part of the Chiefs' offense. But if you're going off running back carries last year, James Cook got 207, Ray Davis got 113, Ty Johnson, their third running back, got 41 carries last year. You would think that that's pretty close to the makeup that it would be for Kansas City. So Isaiah Pacheco in this scenario, he gets your 200 carries. You would have Kareem Hunt, at least as of now, getting that kind of low 100 number. And, I mean, between Elijah Mitchell and Breshard Smith, we'll see who kind of wins that job. I don't know if you're giving one of those guys more than 50 carries unless an injury happens. Like, we got to think about what 50 carries means. I don't really see a scenario in which they're giving Breshard Smith 3 to 4 carries a game unless an injury happens this season, or you just simply take opportunities from somebody else. You got to pass somebody else on the depth chart. You got to beat out Elijah Mitchell. You got to take carries away from Kareem Hunt. You're just not really going to get a lot of touches, at least in the run game. Now, maybe they use him in the pass game. He did play wide receiver at Miami. He's got great hands. Maybe you're using him in that Jerick McKinnon role where he's not going to get 3 to 4 carries a game, but you are going to have certain packages and design things for him to be able to help you in the pass game. Well, obviously, we'll see what that ends up meaning for the Kansas City Chiefs. Let's continue playing Take It or Leave It. So ESPN did some of their fantasy projections today. They have Isaiah Pacheco projected to run for 767 yards, Kareem Hunt at 451, Elijah Mitchell at 127, and they have Breshard Smith, at 7 carries for 29 yards. Now let's get to the wide receivers. They have Xavier Worthy at 70 catches for 927 yards. They have Rice at 85 catches for 959. They have Hollywood Brown at 48 catches for 669. They have Juju Smith-Schuster with 187. Jalen Royals with 78 yards receiving this year. I think you would take this right now for Xavier Worthy. That's a really strong number two. I think you maybe have to take it for Rashee Rice with just not knowing how many games he's going to play this upcoming season. Like, if you're telling me that Rashee gets really close to 1,000 yards, I mean, he either gets that in 15 games or he gets there in 12 or 13. I think you would be very happy if that's the way that it breaks out. And Hollywood in that third role at around 700 yards receiving, I think you got to be really happy with these wide receiver numbers projected from ESPN.
And me and you have seen this the very same way. As you were giving those numbers, I was getting excited. I was like that that gift from Parks and Rec. Gimme, 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 gimme. I would take that in a heartbeat. That would mean the Chiefs essentially have a 1,000-yard receiver in Rasheed Rice because he's going to miss time in 2025. Whether that be two games, four games, six games seems doubtful, but he's going to miss games. He had legal troubles in Dallas. He's going to miss games. If he's missing a couple games, they're getting near 1,000 yards. That's great for the Chiefs. Is Xavier Worthy, who will probably start the season or at some point in the season be the number one option, but then, you know, fall back to number two, is getting near 1,000 yards? Yes, check and check. And I would take it for Hollywood Brown because I don't know Hollywood Brown is a 17-game-a-guy season, and if he's going to play his usual 13, 14, 15, not even the fluke injury part, other injuries he's encountered in his career, and he's getting 700 yards, yeah, I'm signing up for every single one of those players, and it does sound like, based on the projections, they have Jalen Royals as kind of redshirt season, which I'm also cool with because you can walk on some of the expensive Hollywood Brown types in the season. Yes, please.
How many yards do you think they got for Travis Kelce? So they got
between 700 and 800.
They got Xavier Worthy at 927. They got Rasheed Rice at 959. They got Hollywood Brown at 669. How many yards do you think they got for Travis Kelce?
I bet it's very similar to Hollywood Brown, around 700.
They have him for 74 catches, 726 yards, and 5 touchdowns.
I would take that. I don't know Chiefs fans would, but I would take that.
My issue with this is I don't want Travis Kelce to get 100 targets this year.
I mean, I don't want that either, but we both know that he's going to lead the team in targets.
They actually have him third in targets. They have Rice and Xavier Worthy getting more targets. They have him with 100. To me, throwing it to Travis Kelce 100 times this year should not be their play. I would argue then he's on the field too much if you're throwing it to him 100 times, especially when looking at their projections, they got Noah Gray at 44 targets this year. I don't want a Chiefs offense that throws it to Travis Kelce twice as much as they throw it to Noah Gray. I just think at this point, and I think we saw it at times last year, they need to be more proactive in the shift happening. That Noah Gray is possibly your best tight end, using him more and doing everything in your power to try to help get Travis Kelce to the finish line, that he is as fresh and ready to go for the postseason as possible. And throwing it to Travis Kelce 100 times this year, having him on the field for 90% of the snaps the way that you did last season, especially if the team stays healthy this year, I'm just not super interested in that level of usage for Travis Kelce this year. This is the season that I want Kelce to turn more into what Gronk was for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I want him to be more of a situational player, using certain spots, and your goal no longer is about his streak or any of those things. It is about how do we get Travis Kelce as healthy and as fresh for January and February as possible. Because last year, you guys told me you don't care what he does in the regular season. Well, in the last three games for the Chiefs in the postseason, Travis Kelce, for the most part, was a non-factor and was a non-factor in their biggest game of the year. So I don't care about weeks two, weeks three, weeks four, none of those for Travis Kelce. How do we get him back fresh for one final run in the postseason where he can be a potential difference maker for us is what my goal would be for Travis Kelce. We'll continue to talk football coming up on the other side. We have another person who is picking against the Chiefs in the AFC West. We'll also get back to the Royals. Josh Verner set to call in. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison.
This man was a bona fide scrub.
On 96.5 The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
All right, we are starting to keep a running tally of this. Now, if you guys see anybody, certainly let me or Rob know. 913-586-7965. So we have to add Sean Merriman on the list. Sean Merriman is picking the Chargers to win the AFC West. I know that you guys want to put my name on the list, but I am not picking the Chargers to win the division. I don't want anything to do with the Chargers. Delete my number. I've blocked the Chargers. After how they embarrassed me last year in the postseason, no. I'm not going back. Only a fool repeats his folly. I'm not doing it. So you're not going to be able to put me on that list this year. But Sean Merriman is on that list. Colin Cowherd is on that list.
Let's start with the AFC. I would bet my car on this one. Bills win it. Dominant quarterback, not close and well coached. I'm predicting the Patriots will be the most improved team. Drake May actually has a coach. Next up, the AFC North. Even if Aaron Rodgers shows up, they're not beating the Ravens or Bengals. AFC South, I'm going to make a change. I think the Texans win it going away, and the Titans are a wild card team. And in the AFC West, I feel the same way. It's inches, not feet. I think the Chargers embodied, empowered their run game, and they're going to be a ball control offense. It'll be classic Jim Harbaugh in year two. So my AFC playoff predictions: Bills, Ravens, Texans, Chargers, Patriots, Bengals, or new and Chiefs.
Colin Cowherd is picking the Chargers to win the AFC West. We can now add another person onto the list. I mean, we're not even in the middle of May, and we're already adding three people onto the official list of we are picking the Chargers to win the division. Now, this is a person I wouldn't expect. I would expect Mark Schlereth to pick the Broncos. You know, former Bronco, very close with John Elway, still does radio in Denver. I would think that if he was picking anybody to unseat the Kansas City Chiefs, he would pick the Broncos. No, he's picking the Chargers.
The Chiefs will not win the AFC West. It's going to be, you know, mark it down. You think it's going to be the Broncos. I'm going to say it's the Chargers. Wow. I'm going to say it's the Chargers. They're a physical football team. They're going to run the ball. And you look at just the slide the Chiefs have been on since 2018. Look at that. 30.1 points per game. First in the NFL through 18, through 19, through 20, through 21, and 22. The last couple of years, 22 points per game, 16th in the NFL. They just keep sliding. They keep getting guys away. Like, they lost Joe Tooney. They lost, like, they don't have a wide receiver. Like, all these things are piling up on the Kansas City Chiefs, and they continue to trickle down. And this, the one thing I didn't talk about, the refs are no longer going to be favoring the Kansas City Chiefs. Yeah, they got the memo.
Chargers are a good team.
Okay. I don't want this to sound like I don't think that George Tooney is important, because I do think he is important. If you are picking the Chargers or the Broncos because the Chiefs traded Joe Tooney, I don't even know what to do with that bit of information. He plays left guard. Okay. If we had to make a list of the most important positions on the field, left guard is somewhere in the range of 18 to 22 in terms of positional value. Now, he is a very good player. And yes, he showed you the versatility to be able to step out and play left tackle as well. Yes. I'm not here telling you that Joe Tooney is not a good player. I mean, their quarterback comes back, right? Their number one running back is back. You believe that in October they'll have their number one wide receiver back, their number two wide receiver back, their number three wide receiver back from last year. You think that their cornerback room has improved from last season. They bring a majority of their pass rush back from last season. We're not picking the Chiefs because the Chiefs traded Joe Tooney? Okay. So we have the list right now. We will continue to add to the list. If you guys see anybody, 913-586-7965, certainly let me or Rob know. We have three people on the list right now that are picking the Chargers to win the AFC West. We will continue to do a living document of this, a Google Sheets, a living testament, and we will continue to update it and update it as more and more people come in. But right now, the number is at three. We're going to get back to the Royals here coming up in a bit. Josh Vernier is going to call in live from Kauffman Stadium. We'll get his thoughts on the hottest team in baseball. Let's talk some football until Vern calls in. So Pro Football Focus, they had a story today where it was, what is the last offseason move for every team in the NFL? For the Chiefs, it was add more juice at edge rusher. Here was the write-up about it. Kansas City has been content to stay the course regarding their pass rush, but finding an upgrade on the edge would be a great move. Mike Dana isn't cutting it. Inserting a proven veteran option on the edge, such as Za'Darius Smith, would boost the unit, and they go through his Pro Football Focus number. So Pro Football Focus feels like the Chiefs need a little bit more juice on the outside at edge. Isn't the answer for the Chiefs, I think, very simple? Now, we'll see if they are right or wrong, but They believe that the extra juice this season to the pass rush is simply a healthy and viable Charles Omenihu. We're talking about a guy who went from 7 sacks a couple of years ago to then 1 sack last year. Now, he missed a substantial amount of time because of the leg injury. But if everything goes according to plan with Kansas City, I think they have enough pass rush. Now, you got to get Chris Jones back to being a double-digit sack guy. If you have Charles Omenihu there from day one, you think about the impact that that means for George Karlaftis on the other side. We just mentioned Charles Omenihu. You'll get pass rush able from Spags, even able to scheme it together, or a couple of the other pieces that they have on the D-line. I'm actually not super worried about their pass rush. It's not one of the elite premier units in the league, but, Rob, it's certainly a unit that you think is capable of getting to the other team's quarterback.
I think, now listen, PFF and fans, and it's everyone has a different opinion on this. I don't know the Chiefs are going to add more pass rush because I don't think they think they need it because I think they did it in the draft. Now, you, me, Brett Veach, PFF, we can all disagree on what to expect from Ashton Gelati in year one. It is fair to have a wide range of expectations, but I think
you think it's fair. I just go back and sorry to cut you off there. He's a third round pass rusher. You typically aren't getting 5 or more sacks from a third round guy. If we're talking about in year one as a mid round pick, if Ashton Gelati is going to be a guy that gets you 6.5 sacks in years one, the Chiefs have one of the best draft picks in this year's NFL draft. So, obviously, that could happen this season. I wouldn't be counting on getting pass rush from the, 66th overall pick. That's not where I would be counting on it coming from. I think he maybe gets you 2, 2.5 sacks this year. He does not appear to me to be a guy that you are counting on as a staple of your pass rush that's going to get you 5.5 sacks potentially this season.
I don't disagree. I would tell you, though, I think the Chiefs feel like they found a guy that's viable in the room and that they can turn into, he's the next wave of pass rusher. Like, I'm looking at last year's sack leaders among rookies. So I'm looking at it right here. Jonah Ellis for the Broncos. Not a name anyone knows off the top of their head. He was a third-round pick from Utah. He had 5 sacks last year. Damarian Overshawn. Again, not a name that's like, oh, wow, can you believe Overshawn? He was a linebacker for the Cowboys last year. He was a third-round pick also. He had 5 sacks last season. So, like, the idea of if the Chiefs feel like they found a guy on the edge. I'm not talking about, like, you know, Felix. I'm talking about, like, they found a guy. I think 5+ is a reasonable expectation from a rookie in the third round, especially considering it was early in the third round. This wasn't like pick, you know, I'm trying to do the math on this one where Noel Williams got picked. It was late third. This was right at the end of round two, one of the earlier pass rushers to come off the board on day two of the NFL draft. I think 5 is a fair expectation. And if you get an extra 5 sacks from someone, you feel like that has bolstered your pass rush just by one player alone. So I think that's how the Chiefs believe what they found. They believe they found Jonah Ellis or Overshawn. They're going to get their 5 there, and he's going to grow, and that's how they're going to help the pass rush.
Someone on the text line says, I've been saying all offseason that the Chiefs should go get Matthew Judon on a cheap deal. I don't know if you're getting a veteran pass rush. I guess what we are defining as a cheap deal. I don't want to parse words on cheap deal or not. But I am always going to be on the side of you going out and spending a little bit of resource to get yourself a little bit more pass rush. So I'm certainly not against the move. If you were telling me that the Chiefs go get Judon or they go get Smith on a 1 year, let's say it's a $6 million deal that could be $8 million with certain incentives that they end up hitting, I'm certainly not going to be against that move. But to Rob's point, if they think that Ashton Gelati is going to answer a lot of their pass rush questions, I doubt that puts them in the market to go get one of these moves. I mean, Judon and Smith are eventually going to sign with somebody. We know how this goes. These guys don't want to go to OTAs. They don't want to go to mini camp. They'll get signed in late June and show up at training camp, and they'll try to provide some veteran pass rush for a team in the league. Let's head to the phone lines right now and be joined by our guy, Josh Vernier, to talk about the hottest team in baseball. Vern, how you doing, man?
Oh, I'm doing very well. It's always fun when they're winning. When the weather's nice, and both are true today, so feeling really good, man. How are you?
I'm doing great, Vern. What is the biggest difference in this team now than 3 weeks ago?
I mean, offense, you have to point to the offense, right? Vinny's hitting 343 over the, you know, since the calendar flipped to May. We see Jonathan India with an on-base percentage near 400 since the calendar flipped to May. Now, I could go back to Drew Waters and Michael Garcia coming alongside Bobby Witt Jr. That's really when the offense started to have something, you know, bring something to the table. That happened during that Detroit series, and since then they've won 15 of 17. The pitching was great. It's been obscene of lately, six shutouts in the last 13 games. You know, defense has tightened up. The base running's got a little cleaner. Bullpens remain stout, but if I had to pick one, I would say the offense and the bats that we talked about for the first month of the season. C-Dot, Jonathan India, Bobby Salvi, and Vinny Pasquantino. Bobby's been a stud. Salvi's no longer unlucky. He's running into a double basically every single night. And then I mentioned what India and Vinny are doing. So it's those top four bats. And now with Garcia, Waters, and a solid contribution from Freddie Fermin and Kyle Isbell, you feel pretty good showing up to the ballpark for an offense that's averaging more than five runs a game since the calendar flipped to May.
I was just going to say that. Let's talk a little bit more about Michael Garcia. I think his value was, while this offense was still trying to figure things out, he was a constant for this team in those first 15 to 25 games or so that allowed Salvi to turn things around, that allowed Vinny to turn things around. It feels like last year he took a little bit of a dip, and that's going to be certain highs and lows when it comes to a young player. But this is the season that a lot of people expected Michael Garcia to have last year. He has had a phenomenal start to this season.
Yeah, without question. Last time I checked, there were only two hitters in the big leagues with a better batting average and a higher slugging percentage than Michael Garcia, and it's Pete Alonso and Aaron Judge. Throw on top of that the guy can play shortstop on an everyday basis at the big league level. Last year, he was one of the top five base runners in the sports. I still think he's one of the top 20 defensive infielders in the sport. He's hitting for average. He's showing enough extra base power, and we know he has a really good arm. You know, you talk about that step back that he took last season. I think most of that just was maturation, a lack thereof. A 24-year-old that needed to grow up. Now, I didn't grow up, in my opinion, until I was like 31, maybe 32. So I have grace for a guy like Michael Garcia. But to see him make this leap, keep in mind, he's only 3 months older than Bobby Witt Jr. He right now looks like a guy that you're going to have to pay $100 million plus to when his time comes if you don't beat him to the punch. Honestly, he looks like the guy that would have made Jonathan India stay in Cincinnati, right? Maybe you still trade Brady Singer, but if this Michael Garcia was present last year, you're not trading Brady Singer for Jonathan India. You're trading him for something else, but certainly not a leadoff hitter, because Michael looks every bit of a leadoff hitter, of a two-hitter. He's just a terrific five-tool talent.
I was just going to ask you, do you see a scenario in which the Royals shake up the lineup?
No, not until it's dire with India, and like I mentioned, he's picked it up of late. No, because of what I talked about, the same reason why I'm not expecting Carlos Estevez to leave the closer's role anytime soon. It's still a business. You made a business move in parting with Brady Singer to bring in Jonathan India, and the people that made that decision are going to give a long leash to Jonathan India in that leadoff spot, because that's what you brought him here to do. It's certainly not to play defense. It's to hit leadoff and get on base. You brought Carlos Estevez here and gave him more than $20 million to be your closer to get those final three outs, and he's doing a pretty good job of it. I know Lucas Erceg looks like Wade Davis right now, but Wade Davis pitched in the eighth inning in 2014 when he was arguably the greatest reliever since Mariano Rivera, so I don't see any need to shuffle up really much with this team.
Right now we're talking to Josh Vernier, talking about the Royals, who are the hottest team in baseball. Let's talk about the pitching here. This team right now, I don't think we've ever been able to say this, Vern, they might have too much starting pitching. Like, most teams keep up Noah Cameron after the start, at least give him another one. Like, and there wasn't really room for him to be here. I think if you were talking top to bottom, this might be the most complete, from starting pitching to bullpen, this might be the most complete pitching staff that I've ever seen them build.
Yeah, I mean, you think of the second half of 2015. On paper, Cueto, Volquez, Yordano was a pretty strong 1-2-3 led by a true ace in Cueto, but I think Reagans is now, or at least should now, be viewed as one of those true aces. Chris Bubich is knocking on the door. You dive into whatever metric you want to dive into. It says he's one of the 20 best pitchers in Major League Baseball, and he's your number four. The reigning runner-up for the American League, Cy Young, and Seth Lugo, and Michael Wacha, who, according to the metrics, is one of the 15 best pitchers right now in Major League Baseball. Yeah, Noah Cameron. Tough news today with Kyle Wright, as some shoulder fatigue is going to force the team to skip his next few starts as he tries to recover from a litany of injuries that have had him out of the big league since 2023. But still, to have a guy, to your point, to have a guy like Noah Cameron, who takes a no-no into the seventh inning in his big league debut, to have that guy throwing BBs down in Omaha because there's not a spot for him in the rotation in the big leagues is a terrific problem to have. And if he continues to dominate, maybe Lorenzen goes to the bullpen and Cameron makes his way back to the big leagues, or maybe in the second half of the season, like we saw with Daniel Lynch, maybe Cameron finds his way into the bullpen. I think the former is more likely. I think him entering the rotation and Lorenzen going to the bullpen is more likely, but to have those type of options, to your point, is remarkable.
Or possibly, Vern, the Royals have ammunition to go get an outfielder for this team.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Not only those names I just mentioned, and boy, would Kyle Wright be nice, a 29-year-old that's already won 20 games at a season at the big league level, but the Royals have some interesting pieces at the lower levels of the minor leagues as well. And listen, you know, Aroldis Chapman's in town with the Boston Red Sox right now, and I don't think any Royals fan can view him without thinking of Cole Reagans. There's no reason to believe that this organization will be anything but aggressive going into the July 31st trade deadline. So, yeah, whatever it is that ails this team, you know, last year it was the bullpen. You bring in Lucas Erceg and Hunter Harvey, you throw Daniel Lynch out there, and you felt really good about your bullpen down the stretch. If we're still lamenting this right field, one of the corner outfield spots, right? I think it's only down to one. I think we're happy with Drew Waters playing 5 out of 7 games. But yeah, if you're looking for that thump, that true number five hitter, that Kendrys Morales type for this team, I have no reason to believe that this organization won't part with something that they prize to go further than they did last season, to win the whole damn thing.
Vern, which one happens first? Is it Cags comes up or MJ comes back?
Boy, good question. Well, I don't see either happening before the All-Star break. So I'll say, boy, that's a really good question, because injury could have MJ here sooner. But even with injury, I don't believe that happens before the All-Star game. You need to get him right top to bottom. But an injury right after the All-Star break in early August, in a pinch, MJ could find himself up here for a week. I don't see the team taking a mega nosedive to the point where you're saying, all right, Cags is now out of the question because we don't want him viewed as a savior. We want him to join this team as a weapon, someone that we can bring into the lineup in the 7th spot and the 8th spot and let him earn his way up the lineup. Boy, good question. I guess I'll say MJ. I want to say Cags just to get the people going, but an injury and a 3-day stint in the big leagues for MJ, because he's already on the 40-man roster, I got to go with the odds, and the odds say that's the correct answer.
All right, I'll get you out of here with this last question. This is not me knocking Royals fans for attendance, but I'm trying to think of how many cities in America wouldn't have 30,000 people out there today. Like, you factor in everything. The Royals are the hottest team in baseball. The weather is perfect. The Red Sox are in town. It's a Friday with fireworks. Most cities in America go out to support their team. Kind of looking at this as, I'm really curious to see how bought in Royals fans are with this team. You know, back in 2015, I understand the circumstances were different. I mean, they would have had 33,000 people out there tonight to watch this regular season game, and we wouldn't have been talking about graduation or where the stadium is or any of those things. I'm really intrigued to see how bought in Kansas City is with how this early Royals season is going.
Yeah, I'm just trying to pull it up right now, looking at that 2015 team, because even in 2015, they didn't draw 3 million fans, which is still mind-blowing to me, just because I was in Milwaukee during their resurgence in the middle aughts, and the middle teens, who cares? But I was there, and they turned up in droves, right? They hit 3 million in Milwaukee. They've certainly done it in Detroit when I was there. Now, the thing is that I keep coming back to is, you know, Royals fans, and you made mention of it earlier, you know, they watch, they listen, and that's because Royals Nation is pretty spread out, right? Throughout Iowa, Missouri, Kansas, down to Arkansas. Not always a driving distance away from Kauffman Stadium, but to your point, yeah, 30,000 tonight, no, you're not going to get that in Tampa because their ballpark doesn't hold it. Miami, because they don't trust big league baseball down there for good reason. Sacramento wouldn't. Maybe the Angels, you know, but outside of that, man, it certainly wouldn't be a good look. Yeah, I'm looking at 2015 right now, Friday at home, the Yankees, May 15th, had 34,500. So, yeah, I think it's a fair request that the Royals hit 30,000 tonight, but, you know, we've been here too long, man. I'm not holding my breath.
And that is our guy, Josh Vernier, joining us on the show today. You can hear him coming up in about 2 hours or so as he gets you ready for, hopefully, another Royals win. And, right. Vern, I need a win today in betting. You've asked me to do it a couple
times.
Come on,
man.
I haven't won yet.
Rob got a win this week. Pick it up.
I'm going to do better, Vern. Thank you, man.
All right, buddy. I appreciate it. Thank you.
That is our guy, Josh Vernier, joining us on the show today. Coming up on the other side, let's talk about Bill Belichick, because what is going on? Keep it right here, Mr. Drive.
Hey, it's Lucas Ersig from the Kansas City Royals. You're listening to The Drive with CDOT on 96.5 The Fan.
Brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
All right, so I hate that we're doing this again, but it just keeps coming up. Let's talk about Bill Belichick and his relationship with this Jordan Hudson person. Now, I have a pretty sound rule. I try not to use my free time to talk about what other people do in their free time. I don't care who Bill Belichick is in a relationship. I really don't. She is a consenting adult. He's a consenting adult. They are allowed to do whatever they want to do. But the fact that it has become so public, and public to the point where whenever your university has to release multiple statements about your coach's girlfriend, something has gone awry here. Something is amiss. So let me play you guys the update from Pablo Torre, who used to work at ESPN and now works for Meadowlark Media. So he had an update today on what is going on in Carolina. He had a lot. We won't play all of it for you. He believes, or is hearing, that they are planning on doing a reality show, and that's why they are trying to keep some of the details about their relationship private, because they want to sell it to Bravo. We know about the Super Bowl incident, that Bill Belichick was in a Super Bowl commercial. She was a problem. There also was a report today that she wanted to be in the commercial so much that they filmed her part but didn't turn the camera on. At every single turn, this young lady has inserted herself in the middle of Bill Belichick's business and job, and that's where we kind of got to talk about it. Here's Pablo Torre.
Two sources at the University of North Carolina tell me that there has been a decision. It was made last week by the higher-ups inside the athletic department that had hired Bill Belichick to be the highest-paid public employee, not just coach, in the state of North Carolina at $10 million a year. And that decision was that Jordan Hudson is no longer allowed in the football building.
Okay.
She is not allowed on the football field.
Mm-hmm.
Quote, don't think you'll be hearing much from Jordan moving forward.
So that was Pablo Torre talking about his report that Carolina has essentially told her, yo, keep her away. They then come out and say, no, that's not true. She is welcome to come up here. You know what this feels like to me? It feels to me like we are heading towards a Bill Belichick resignation on a random summer day. That's what it feels like to me. It feels to me like we are heading towards, we are going to come up here and it's going to be June 17th. And we are going to see a tweet. We are going to see some kind of report that Bill Belichick is considering stepping down as the head coach. It is May 9th. It is early May. And we are already having multiple conversations about his girlfriend, and they don't start playing football games for another 3.5 months. We got more of this to go with Bill? I can't think of a person, and maybe you guys can't. I cannot think of a person who in such a short period of time has shifted our perception of him. Bill was the hoodie. Bill didn't answer questions. Bill was very short. Bill didn't really let us into his personal life. And for the last month, all we have done is learn more and more about the relationship that he is in. And it's not like any of the updates we're getting are good. Is she your girlfriend, or is she your PR director? Or is she your handler? Or is she your publicist? Because I don't know if she can be all of those things. Right now, Bill seems to be the old guy with a lot of money that is being taken by the young, pretty, attractive girl. And that is a storyline that we have seen play itself out plenty of times. Bill looks like he has his nose wide open. That's what it looks like to me. He looks to me like the old guy who was in a relationship with somebody that was his age. They grew apart, broke up, whatever you want to say. He then met this young girl, and this young girl has her hooks into him, something fierce, and won't let go. Bill, you don't realize how silly she has you out here looking? And now, this is not just like a local story. You got the New York Post. You got the New York Daily News. You got TMZ digging around in your relationship. Bill, you're in your 70s. This is not how you need to be moving at 70s. You got grandkids. You look goofy is how you look. I'm telling you how this thing ends. I'm telling you how this thing ends. This thing ends with Bill Belichick resigning in the middle of the summer. That's how this ends. I think at some point they're going to come to him and they're going to say, you got to pick. Hey, we can't do this. These are just the stories that we know. There's always more we don't know. These are the stories that we know. At some point, I think somebody up there that's paying for all of this, some booster, some sponsor, hey, Bill, this ain't what we signed up for. We signed up for you. We didn't sign up for her. You got the family doing anonymous sources saying they're digging into her background. I think they're going to make him pick at some point, and I think he's going to pick her. I don't think Bill Belichick's coaching in North Carolina. Maybe I'm overreacting to all the news, but it ain't been a good month for Bill Belichick. There has not been a positive story that has come out about this relationship in a long time. It hasn't been. It kind of feels, and I know it's a weird comparison, it feels like we should have saw what was going to happen with Shadur. We should have saw it. For the last month leading into the draft, they basically kept telling you, hey, we don't really like this guy like that. I don't know why we were so surprised that he kept dropping in the draft. There wasn't a positive story about Shadur for the final 3 to 5 weeks of the process. Tell me the last Bill Belichick football story. How do they do in the portal? How is he responding to his teammates or his fellow coaching? What staff has he put together? There's one college football coach we're talking about right now. It's Bill Belichick about his girlfriend. We ain't talking about Ryan Day. We ain't talking about Dabo Swinney. We're not talking about how Indiana can get back to the postseason. No, we're talking about Bill and his 20-something-year-old girlfriend. She got you out here looking bad, Bill. Let's see what happens, man.
Have we had a North Carolina football story? Is the only one we've had, he got hired? I can't think of another one. Who's their quarterback? Did they get aggressive in the portal? What's their ACC prediction? What's their non-con look like? You know, things we ask about college football teams. Do we talk about any of those things? Maybe the greatest football coach of all time is now in the college level at North Carolina, and the only time we talk about it is his girlfriend. Now, maybe this is like all some 4D chess and no one's about the team, and he's created this media, you know, move to finally hide himself from people asking questions about the team. So we know he hates that, but You and me like college football a lot, Carrington. Who's their quarterback? No one knows off the top of their head, but we know his girlfriend's name.
I'm telling you, the last three girlfriends we've talked about have been Taylor Swift. Understandable. She's the most famous woman in the world. Travis Hunter and his girlfriend, he's 20. So yeah, he might be in a relationship that we're kind of looking at a little funny. Like, he's 20. He's going to do 20-year-old things. Bill, you're 70. And it looks like you're getting played. That's what it looks like. It's sad to see Bill going out like this. I guess we're on to Cincinnati. I guess that's maybe the only other way that we can put it.